GEFA im Gespräch. Der Podcast der Austrian Self-Care Association.
Hello and welcome to a new season of GEFA im Gespräch, the podcast of the Austrian Self-Care Association. I'm Christina Nagler, the Executive Director of GEFA. In this new season, we'll dive into artificial intelligence, exploring the opportunities and challenges innovative technologies present for the self-care industry. AI has long been used in medical diagnostics. Wearables like fitness trackers and health apps are widespread among the public. A new chapter began with the public introduction of AI systems like ChatGPT. Trustworthy AI application can support individuals in their self-care and potentially relieve the capacities of healthcare systems. In this and upcoming episodes of the new podcast season, I'll discuss how AI can be meaningfully integrated into self-care with various experts all over the world. That's why we stay within English in this season as well. Today, I'll be discussing this with my first podcast guest. A warm welcome to Christine Sørensen. Great to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Before we dive deeper into the relationship between AI and health literacy, I'd like to briefly introduce my guest. Living in Denmark, Christine Sørens founded the Global Health Literacy Academy in 2015. Previously, she worked on the editorial board of the ICT and Health, which includes government officials, innovation leaders, medical specialists, scientists, IT specialists, and patients. Currently, she's a senior in public health at the University of Southern Denmark and a senior advisor to McKinsey & Company. I'm eager to hear what Christine, a health literacy expert, has to say about the opportunities and challenges associated with ChatGPT and co. Let's start with a fundamental question. Could you briefly explain what services the Global Health Literacy Academy offers and the general role of health literacy in successful self-care means, Christina?
Yes, thank you very much for the invitation to be here today. I have a background in public health science, and 10, 15 years ago, I was invited to coordinate an European survey on health literacy. And even though I had a university degree in public health, I didn't know what health literacy was. I'm Danish, so I'm not a native English speaker. But working with colleagues in 8 countries, we explored what the meaning of health literacy was and why it's important. And we were asked to measure it at a European level. So that kicked off my journey into the health literacy field. And after some years at Maastricht University in the Netherlands, I launched the Global Health Literacy Academy. And today I work as a consultant and I support governments, industry, NGOs, patient organizations, the World Health Organization and others to develop their health literacy agenda. And hopefully in this way, they also make a change. And you may ask, what is health literacy then? Like I asked at the time when I started my journey, and we define health literacy as the knowledge and motivation and competences for people to find and understand and judge and use information to take decisions in everyday life when they're ill, when they're at risk, and when they try to stay healthy. And it develops over the lifetime. So you can think of all the health knowledge and skills that you have when you manage your own health in everyday life. You can learn it from your family, what you have learned in school. So, for example, with kids, you know, they learn how to brush their teeth or not eat too much sweet. Later, they will learn to wear maybe a bicycle helmet. It could be about sexual education, protect themselves. When we're adults, it's about handling stress. for example. And in older ages, it's about healthy living and active living as when we grow old. So I'm looking at health from a very wide perspective. And when it's about physical health, mental health, social health, spiritual health, financial health, all what we need to know to develop our own potential and have great lives.
So I guess your work has changed significantly with the introduction of things like ChatGPT or other AI tools. What have you realized? What are the benefits those AI tools bring to health literacy? And how can AI be used to support people with their daily self-care? What do you think?
Yeah, exactly. So it has definitely changed the conversations before. Or as a public health specialist, we tend to think that people will find their way, their knowledge on health at the websites of the health authorities, but they don't. They Google, you know, they ask them to Google what is wrong.
Definitely.
They observe their symptoms and so on. So it's changing the whole conversation. And it also means that the digital literacy and what we call digital health literacy are skills that we need to take really serious in a time with AI. And I usually take a positive approach mostly, where I believe that the digital age has actually democratized knowledge so that everybody can find new knowledge about health. It's not something that is kept and only the doctors know or nurses know. It's something we all now have access to. And this especially helps people with, for example, rare diseases. And it has also helped us to see the growth of, for example, Facebook groups and forums where those who suffer from certain diseases can find a community. So there are all these digital communities. And because we have healthcare systems that are less accessible now, people tend to go to the internet and find their answers. And yes, of course, there are challenges with we need to make sure there are trustworthy information, the stakeholders there are acting in good faith. And of course, we know that there's also a lot of misinformation and disinformation and so on. And now with AI coming up, it requires again new skills because there we need to train people to ask the right questions, not only to find the right answers, but also asking the right questions. Because what we prompt to the AI system will define what answers we get.
Right.
And we also need to evaluate those answers. Are they right? Can we trust them? Are they correct? And so forth.
And what do you think? How can people be prevented from being misled by misinformation generated by those AI tools? And are there any other challenges that exist in using AI tools to support self-care?
So we know from some of our research on general health literacy that almost one in two have had difficulties in finding and understanding and judging and using information to take decisions, share decisions, inform decisions about their own health. And therefore, I do see it as not only an individual challenge, but a public health challenge. How do we support people to find timely and accurate and relevant information that can bring them to help when they're ill, but also build up their own, you know, sustainable lives. We have an own responsibility, certainly. We need to push ourselves to learn more about all these new aspects. And I do see a lot of communication. I have a mother-in-law who is 75. She's teaching her fellow elderly colleagues and people and neighbors in her neighborhood about first using Word, then using the smartphone and iPad so that they can get in touch with their grandchildren and so on. So it starts, you know, from a very personal dialogue about how do we use technical devices in the best way. But it also requires us from a system perspective to design easy to use services that can guide people to find the best help for them and guide them to good services. And that require a whole new way of thinking. And I do believe that AI, in a positive sense, can serve as a new health coach, basically, if we design it well. But if it's fed with misinformation and disinformation, if we are not alert to actually interpret the information, then it goes wrong. And I actually saw it recently when, if I put in my own name at some point, it said I would be a professor at a Danish university here, because it's bringing a lot of different small pieces of information together, and it thinks self. But I'm not a professor at a Danish university. I used to be assistant professor in Netherlands, and I used to be honorary professor at a university in Taiwan. And of course, I'm often called professor because I've been in the academic world for a long time, but that's more the American way of saying everybody's professor.
Yeah.
But now AI, they put it all together. ChatGPT, and then it told me that I was a professor at the university where I actually studied medicine 25 years ago, but I never graduated as a medical doctor because I changed to public health. So I just it taught me to at least be aware to be skeptical. And the challenge with AI is that the information it's feeding us doesn't give the references to the sources. With Google, we were used to see the first links and we could go and dive deeper into any information. And that's not possible with AI. Some of the new chatbots do that, but we really have to be still very, very careful about sources. But that's not different from anything else, from any other,
right.
You know.
Definitely, yeah. So do you think there is a need for new legal or ethical frameworks to prevent people from being misled when searching for reliable health information? And what can we as the self-care industry contribute to make the use of AI services a responsible one?
I've had an interesting case where some years ago, before the pandemic, I heard a very interesting presentation by a doctor from India. And he said he used staff used WhatsApp to reach small villages and on diabetes. And then they had these WhatsApp consultations and they could take photos of any wounds or anything. And then based on that e-consultation, they could check whether that patient needed to go to the hospital, because that would take many hours, it would be very expensive. So to save everybody's resources, this was the way they did it. And also the staff could actually work from home and didn't have to go to the hospitals only those days where it was needed. So all in all, his whole approach was they saved a lot of resources, they helped many more people, and it was through WhatsApp. But when I tell this story here in Denmark, where I'm based, the first response is, well, you can't, they use WhatsApp because it's not safe. And
data protection.
Exactly. And for me, I thought, wow, this was so fantastic that they actually reached so many people they could help. And then data protection was a later priority in the chain. But I realize we are, also living in Denmark. We have all the services and so on. So we are maybe at a state where data protection comes as a first priority before we actually help the persons with health. But it's just an interesting dilemma. Where are we and where do we want to compromise? And what is data safety to whom? You know, because many of us use, for example, WhatsApp and so on. And there are many different channels. And especially in a country where actually our colleagues in healthcare did not use e-consultations, they wanted to have people in the clinics here, and that's because they're paid for it. So we also need to make, see what kind of systems are we actually designing with what kind of system can we help most people the best way, so to speak. And I truly believe that these new technical winnings can help us as much as possible. And I do believe that AI and the whole digital world can help people at home and prepare them when they have the encounter with the healthcare system much more. But it leaves, of course, a challenge on how can we trust the providers to have safe and secure data transmission, and also that it's not being used, but also a lot of other actors in the digital world. We don't want the Wild West. We don't want that people are doing all these phishing mails and so on. And SMS, and but that, I guess, that's also human. When you bring humans together, you have people who want to take advantage. So we may need to have, you know, like an AI police or digital police, and or the sheriffs coming to help us, or at least some kind of new stewardship to guide and protect that we are not being misled, and that will require new disciplines and new insights. We can't just leave it like it is, but we also, on the other hand, need to build on trust. And I think with regards to law and ethics, it's very interesting right now in the world we live in right now. Industry has more power than governments when it comes to these digital platforms. It's led by mavericks like Elon Musk and others, big tech guys, and they are not elected. They are not, you know, chosen to do this, but governments need to step up to follow. We do see that the European Parliament and the European Commission is trying to make some land winnings there, where, for example, the Commissioner, Margrethe Vestager, she's been very hard on some of the tech companies, but many didn't dare to do it, you know. And if it's management by fear, or that we because of fear don't dare to take those very difficult conversations with the stakeholders in the field, then we have problems, and we probably have problems here. So it's for all of us to stand up for our rights and speak up when we see that we are being misused. I've tried it myself. Yeah. There was a phishing mail going around to all my friends and colleagues somehow, saying that I was asking for money, and I needed $20,000 or euros or whatever to some, and then people were texting me saying, "Well, Christine, you need this money." I said, no, it's not for me. It's not for me." And so I've tried it. It's really not, you know, I don't feel comfortable. I had to write out to everyone, "Don't to pay anything." So we have to learn it, to on one hand build on the trust, but also safeguard ourselves.
But what do you think about, I mean, the law in Europe is mostly made in the 80s regarding advertising and things like that. So nothing about internet, and definitely nothing about AI. So now we have, of course, AI acts, but aren't politics always behind, as you said, the tech companies? And isn't it a disadvantage being in Europe? Like, we have the World Wide Web, so we get the information no matter where it comes from worldwide. So can we really protect Europe from misinformation? Shouldn't we rather, like you said with your phishing mail, inform the people in Europe about how to use it properly?
I think your laws and so on can be made at national level and European level. And I love that we have this dialogue at European level in EU on how to protect ourselves, because this kind of information, as you mentioned, goes across borders. But we also know that health is a national matter, at least at EU level. So the solutions have to be found nationally and sometimes regionally. And I think actually the awareness happens locally in our families, where we need to help each other in families, in schools, and in our workplaces and so forth. That's where the local action takes place. And in many companies, they have on-site trainings for their employees in terms of data security, because they are under cyber attack. And we have seen it in many different places. So what I hear and see is that, especially at the workplace, this is a serious threat and concern, and this is why many employees are now taught to handle data with care. What we then need to make sure is that they also bring it to their home situation. And of course, some types of jobs you're not encountered with this, and there we need to bring it along as well. But for the European level, I truly believe we need to keep stimulating these kind of conversations. We also have different directions on what is it that we're willing to share as people. Now, you have some people who want to share all their data because they believe that, for example, through science, we can help make great developments by sharing our data.
Or stay healthy.
And stay healthy. And others say, well, no, it's my data and you want to protect it. And it's interesting with the whole genomics field that has also exploded. And you can for 30 euros, you can get your own DNA profile, you know, but that... And you get some insights you may or may not want to know, because suddenly you realize about all kinds of connections. And I see it a bit with our data patterns. We leave so many digital footprints. We have absolutely no idea how our data can be used or misused. So we can try to, you know, confirm, but how many of us honestly really read all those precaution letters that we have to click with all the small data, small letters? We don't. And this is where I'm somehow alluding to that we do all this in good faith. You know, we trust, we try to build it up on trust, like in any other infrastructure of society. And this is where we probably need more types of like stewards or guards that would help to do the work for us to protect. And we see this with Facebook. They clean Facebook, or at least try to. And we need to look at how we can keep working on this, because we can't do it on our own. We have absolutely no clue with all these data prints. And that actually concerns me with research, that sometimes I feel we are in the Stone Age when we are looking at questionnaires with 10 questions or 30 questions, and then you know that the digital savvy people who disrupted some of the elections and Brexit and so on, they have 8,000 data points, you know, to check, and they can completely make my digital twin and target any information to me without me knowing. So I'm being manipulated to mean something or to have an opinion about something. We see the whole about manipulation of pictures, of sounds, of voice, of speech, and so forth. So it's something we really need to be aware of up front, and only by sharing or by having, you know, in being in this position of being abused, like I had this phishing mail letter sent around, we see how quickly it can happen. Where we do need is to have these human conversations, because we are not the internet. It will help us, but it can be a blessing, but it can also be a curse. And that's what we need to balance.
Let's return to health literacy. You are a global advocate for strengthening health literacy. What is crucial in this effort, and what are the key measures to improve people's health literacy?
I believe health literacy can be a major game changer. I see a big change in how people want to live their lives. Many have been caught up with mental health issues, and I believe the pandemic gave us like a break where we slowed down and could see that there is also some benefits of actually living life in another pace, and where we have the time to actually take care of ourselves. We all had to learn about a new disease and take precautions. So we're all in the same boat. And that raised some questions around how can we actually strengthen our physical health, mental health, social health. But that takes time, and we need all actors on board. So we encourage companies, yes, to incorporate health and well-being as part of their business DNA. not only about safety at work, but really introducing well-being programs at work and creating a healthy culture at work. But also then for governments to introduce national action plans on health literacy, making it easier for people to stay healthier. That's what it's all about. And it's about aligning all our services happening at local level, at regional level, in national levels, and learning from the best so that we can shift the focus from staying alive and being productive to be able to live rich life where we are nourished. And I believe this is possible if we can start making other priorities and focusing on, for example, well-being economies, where it's also about prioritizing, yeah, differently. And that beca then it becomes a political choice. And what kind of societies do we really want? And going back to your very first question, where is AI and the digital world in this? It's such an important scene because it provides everybody with the information to stay healthy. But if we have barriers or build up too much bureaucracy, of if when we know that resources are scarce in healthcare systems, we need all to take on the responsibility to be the best versions of ourselves. And I believe this is where the digital skills matter so much. And AI, as I said, as a health coach, can help us in this way. First of all, look at all the new opportunities that it brings, but be skeptical about, not to be misled or misused or abused.
One final question. How do you personally use artificial intelligence? And is there any application you can recommend to us?
Yeah, I use ChatGPT. Mostly, I also made the pro service, or what you call it. I have a monthly, and I use it a lot to explore all kind of things that I don't know. I see it very much like remember the old time lexica, yeah, right.
Blockhaus, it's
So
called in
I
Austria.
had those when I was a kid, and when I visited my grandparents, he had like 25 books with from A to Z, and I could look. What is Australia? What is this and that? And I see ChatGPT has this kind of function. If there's something, just to give me really a rapid insight. It's like a second brain, but where we need to be cautious is indeed, yeah, is it correct? What the answer is? Is it correct? And also, it brings the average. Right, it doesn't bring us new thinking because it takes what is general out there and put it together. But it can't look into the future; it looks backwards. So it builds on information that is available now. But the creativity we need to bring into the game. But it helps me to start what I call the conversation. It starts my level of information at a higher level than before. So if there are any big reports or anything I need, I can quickly get to the main points and start from there, rather than having to read first 200 pages and then decide on the main point. And then it makes us able to react quicker. But of course, we need to also take us time to think and reflect and be critical about the information we get. But as I said, this is a skill that was also needed in the newspaper age, magazine age, and normal education age. So it has to be refined with this new world.
Thank you, Christina, for sharing your expertise on health literacy and the opportunities and challenges associated with our new AI tools. Thanks for being my guest.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
There's much to discuss regarding AI in self-care, and I'm excited that we'll continue to examine this highly relevant topic from various angles in upcoming episodes of IGEFA im Gespräch. If you want to learn more about AI in self-care, be sure to tune in next time when our new episode goes on air. And if you are interested in learning more about IGEFA and our services in the meantime, feel free to email me at office@igefa.at. Thank you for your interest, and I look forward to reconnecting in our next podcast episode.